Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Today, man, this is a Monday, and this is a Monday in December. It's just nasty.
Well, it is.
I mean, and it's going to be nasty. It's going to be nasty for some schools, for sure. It could be a beautiful Monday for some schools.
Brian, your mic was not on, so if you want to add that again.
Portal Monday.
Yeah, there, but weather-wise, no, this is not the kind of day that you want to be out in. So, but I mean, I know since we're just a couple of weeks away from Christmas, there are quite a few people that are out and about. Welcome in, everybody. The Monday edition of The Drive after a big week, and there's a lot to discuss from this past weekend and today. I mean, we've got Auburn basketball, college basketball. Auburn still number two.
Yeah.
Tennessee jumping the Tigers to number one.
What about that top five, though? Auburn plays or has played every team.
Auburn has beaten three, lost to four, and will play one and five.
Yep. And I don't want to obsess too much on the AP top 25 or the coaches pulling college basketball, because those are, you know, they really are just for show. And Auburn in a lot of the advanced metrics, Lenardi had Auburn as the top team in his bracketology. Last week before, I can't imagine losing to. Losing to Duke harmed
at
Auburn.
Duke harmed
Auburn that much. So I think it's important not to get too worked up over where you are in the, you know, especially in the top five of the AP poll or the coaches poll in college basketball. Where you are in the college football playoff poll, now that matters quite a bit. You know,
yeah, and what happened Saturday night was about the only way that the SEC didn't have four teams and that Alabama wasn't in the playoff, because SMU at the end of the first quarter, it looked like, well, this is a no-brainer. And as a matter of fact, going to the fourth quarter, even though SMU played, thought SMU played very well from the second quarter on, but they were still down 17 going to the fourth quarter. But to mount that comeback, bring it all the way back, tie it with just a matter of seconds to play, and then lose on the last second 56-yard field goal, made it impossible for the committee not to put SMU in and not blow up conference championship games.
Yeah, and I know there was, I know there are some folks, beating their chest. There was never any danger of the ACC only getting one team in.
That danger was there until the last second of that ball game. I mean, because if Clemson holds on and wins, or if SMU wins the game in overtime, Clemson's not going.
Right, and the headline ultimately becomes Alabama is left out of a playoff that I think going into the weekend most people thought they were going to make,
the thing is, and Greg Byrne can talk about non-conference schedules.
I think we're on the same.
What does non-conference have to do with it? Alabama lost three conference games. They lost two conference games to 6-6 teams. That is why Alabama's not in. You look at the field, there is one three-loss team in the field, and they are ACC champs. So, I mean, no matter what, it was up to Alabama. Alabama, if they beat either Vandy or Oklahoma, they're in. And I was mentioning
The committee opened this door by putting Alabama ahead of Miami.
Yes,
in the most recent rankings, because they could have kept Miami ahead of Alabama, and they could have, you know, made it clear that the ACC was going to get two, and that there was going to be and here's the other thing.
I don't necessarily see it that way, because Miami was out of the ACC championship.
Sure.
So I can see where you would put a three-loss SEC team ahead of a two-loss other conference team that wasn't playing for the conference title. But
and they did that with BYU as well, right? BYU also a two-loss team, not playing for its conference championship game, ranked behind.
So that makes sense. All right,
go ahead.
They're going to have to be some changes made. I mean, the first and simplest change that's going to need to be made.
Yeah, I want to know. Yeah, what do you think?
When you look at the bracket, you're going to have a better way of seeding teams. You cannot just say your top four conference champions are the top four seeds. Look, in college basketball, when you win a conference tournament, you're in, but you're not necessarily given a high seed. So what I think the first thing they need to do is say your conference champion is in the top, you know, the Power Four conference champions are in, but they're not necessarily the top four seeds. Then you seed the teams.
So you don't like, because I remember you being a fan of the idea that the top four seeds had to be conference champions when this format was introduced. Is that not true?
No, I was more a fan of they definitely need to be in the playoff. I think they should automatically be in.
I seem to being a debate about whether or not Notre Dame could be a top four seed without winning a conference title, and I remember people thinking, "Oh, it's good that you make the top four seed."
Now that you've seen this, no, it's not good.
Now I would say, I mean, I agree with you. I would think if you're expanding, maybe you go to 14, and if 1-2 have to be conference champions, I'm okay with that.
And you know what the SEC and Big Ten are going to say is they're going to say, let's go to 14, and our conference champions are the top two seeds, and everybody else plays.
Which is almost assuredly what would happen, I think, in that format. Unless you had two lost champions and an undefeated ACC team, maybe you could see them breaking into the top two.
I still think the SEC and Big Ten are powerful enough. But I think they're going to. That's what we're getting.
I think they're going to insist they get four automatic bids.
I think
if you're going to do that, you need to go to 16.
I have a theory. I think they will go to 14 or 16.
Yeah,
I have a theory.
You're going to have eight automatic bids. I think you need more than.
I want to run it by the two of you, because I do think that what I wonder about happening because of yesterday. I was already pessimistic about it. I think yesterday is going to be an excuse to keep the SEC at eight conference games.
Oh, absolutely.
I think yesterday is going to be.
I think more conferences are going to look at what was it? Which one was it? The Big 12?
Well, the Big 12 was talking about dropping from 9 to 8.
Going to 8.
Yeah, I think yesterday was a bad day for people who want the SEC to play nine conference games in 2026.
Unless they change things drastically.
But if they do the four automatic bids, then it won't matter.
I still think that the lesson from the committee is going to be that the quality of your victories isn't necessarily as important as the quantity of your victories if you're playing major conference football, as long as you're in the major conferences. And if that's the case, then why on earth would you trade I think the question there would be who did SMU?
Nine is better in the SEC than 10 is.
But all the people
ACC.
Whining about Alabama, they didn't have a non-conference loss.
No, Alabama didn't have a non-conference loss, but Alabama had wins over Georgia and South Carolina, top 15 teams, SMU's lone victory over
Georgia is their biggest win, without question. But the thing is, I don't know.
And I've always thought, and I made this argument last week, I think that if you were just looking at them in a vacuum, the argument for Alabama over Ole Miss seems to be Alabama is historically a better program. Because I think
I don't like that argument.
No, but I think on the field this year, I mean, what you're going to point to the Georgia and South Carolina wins for Alabama? Ole Miss looked better in both of those games. Ole Miss beat Georgia more handily than Alabama did. They beat South Carolina in Columbia more handily than Alabama did. So I think there was Ole Miss might be the most jilted team left out of this field based on the resume. I think they might have had the best resume
of
any team.
They might be, but you can't leave Clemson out.
No.
You can't leave an ACC. I mean, somebody is going to be the best team left out. And what all Ole Miss or Alabama could argue about is they're the best team that was left out, but they don't have an argument based on what the committee had been talking about all year long on being in.
But I think a lot of SEC teams.
I don't have
teams,
a problem with it at all.
No.
How it is.
No, this is the way it should have been from what they said and to the guidelines that they gave.
But I think SEC teams are going to say, why would we trade a winnable non-conference game, a bye game, why trade that for a conference game right now? What's the upside of that in this format? If you turn a you turn a winnable game into a losable game,
right.
for to what end?
All right. Right,
like that. I guess that's the argument now.
I guess so. But who is a playoff contender lost an out of conference game that cost them from getting in? Nobody.
It's about adding an extra conference game, though.
Right. No, but adding what is the benefit of adding an extra conference game right now in the face of what happened yesterday? I understand an SEC team saying, what is the benefit of playing a ninth conference game instead of playing a winnable game against an FCS team or a low major team?
If you have four guaranteed teams in, like Brian's saying, then there's no reason not to do it.
It's fine. Then,
your top four teams are going
to
get in.
But without changes to the format,
right.
based on what happened. If there are no changes to the format, it's totally reasonable for an SEC team to say absolutely not to nine conference games.
Well, we're
getting
the same format next year, and they're going to be talking over the next 9 months about the format starting in 2026.
Right. And Greg Sankey wants to go to nine conference games. Yeah. So the SEC is going to have to have some changes made to the college football playoff. But it's crazy. I thought it was really crazy that Greg Byrne wants to come out and talk about out-of-conference games when Alabama's out-of-conference schedule was terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was absolutely terrible, and they didn't lose a non-conference game.
I love that he got community noted for that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious.
I mean, the at-large you're competing against is SMU, right? Like, if anything, the argument should be, like, where are SMU's wins, right? Like, who are the best teams SMU? Like,
teams play who's on their schedule.
Correct.
Georgia had a much tougher schedule than Alabama, Ole Miss, or South Carolina, the three teams that are down there below them.
Georgia won enough
games.
The question would be, has the SEC, and for that matter the Big Ten, have they elevated past the other leagues to the point where practically everyone else should be a one-bid league in this format?
You know what?
Possibly.
You know what? We may find out in the next month. If the SEC goes and lays an egg in the college football playoff, then all the tooting and screaming and whatever, it's just shut up and let's see it.
And vice versa. If the SEC...
We all believe how great the SEC is. We'll see.
We will.
I mean, Georgia waxed Clemson.
If Texas had won that game, I think there'd be a very interesting argument to be had about what you do with Georgia in the face of what happened to Florida State last year, being left out after a quarterback injury.
Right.
I think we'll find out
when they play.
And I think the playoff committee. I want to stand with you guys. I think the playoff committee got it right. Like, I think this is the right selection. If you wanted to make a case for a 9-win SEC team, and I'm not saying for Alabama because I just said I think Ole Miss probably has the strongest case of the 9.
If you
SEC
really
teams.
Wanted to blow everything up, that's what you'd do. If you put Alabama in, then everything would have. Then we would have had some huge changes coming immediately.
And the message
conferences would have immediately. Schools would have immediately said, we don't need the conference championship game anymore. The college football playoff committee saved conference championship games at least for the time
being.
I think they're on the way out.
Yeah, but if they put Alabama in, they'd be gone. They'd be gone now.
And the message, like we just said, you'd be sending the message that this is the SEC, the Big Ten, and a bunch of one-bid leagues.
Right.
Like that's the message you could have sent by snubbing the loser of the ACC championship game had it been SMU. I think the committee ultimately now SMU's probably one loss away from, like, if one of those regular season games, right? If you're talking about a 10-2 SMU team instead of an 11-1 SMU team, it's probably easier to leave them and Miami out in favor of Alabama, who ultimately was the first team
out.
SMU
does have their two losses are both by 3 points.
Correct.
I mean, the funny thing is
Ole Miss has a stat like that, right? Like, Ole Miss's three losses are by a combined, however, like 10 or 13 points.
It's going to be really interesting with the possibilities of weather being such a huge factor here in the college football playoffs. But the funniest thing, where you've got the top four conferences having the top four seeds, Penn State in losing the Big Ten championship game has a much better path.
I know
than Oregon. Yeah. The number one overall seed does because of those three and four spots being put there and having to move other teams down.
They're not going to do it. I think reseeding after every round based on where you were in the college football playoff would be reseeding.
You can't reseed after every round.
No, but doing something based on where they were in the rankings that more closely corresponds, because you're right, when you move teams to 3 and 4 because they're automatic conference champions, it throws off the seeding.
It messed everything.
It throws off the seeding of the tournament.
You've got Penn State sitting there. They get a home game. If they win that, they go to Phoenix to take on Boise.
Yep.
And then there they are. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I mean, there's an argument.
Probably Miami.
There's an argument.
Georgia or Notre Dame.
There's an argument to be made that Tennessee, Ohio State, and Oregon are 3 of the 7 best teams in this tournament.
Maybe, yeah.
And they are in the same pod. So the winner of the Tennessee Ohio State game plays Oregon in the Rose Bowl. And I mean, and only one of those teams can advance to the semifinals. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, like, as good as it sounds to say, yeah, let's have the 8-9 play the 1.
But it really needs to be the 8-9.
Yeah.
Because Tennessee and Ohio State are not the 8-9. They're like the 6-7.
The other big problem for me is is still incorporating the bowls into this. I just don't see the point for Oregon, who is, I'm sure, desperate to win a national championship. They've been a good team for a long time now. I mean, they start out in the Rose Bowl. That's a very expensive trip. If they win that, they're probably playing potentially Texas in the Cotton Bowl. So they got to travel all the way to Dallas. If they win that game, they got to travel all the way to Atlanta. I mean, how many thousands of dollars would it cost to be an Oregon fan who wants to cheer for your team as it marches toward the national championship.
Phil Knight can afford that.
Phil Knight can, but
you're right. The fans, if you plan on making multiple trips to see your team in the postseason, like
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I understand, and that's sort of the argument for, as great as buys sound, I feel like that's an argument for 16 and just giving the top eight home games. So you sort of reward everyone.
There should be home games all the way to at least the semifinals and maybe all the way to the finals, in my opinion. That's how it is in the NFL.
And I think that was in part because
that's how it is at the FCS level.
Right.
They had the Big Six bowl games, right, during the college football playoff. They had six bowl games and a championship they wanted to incorporate into the quarterfinals, semifinals, and
there is no written in stone anywhere on the top of a mountain saying that the college football playoffs have to include the bowls and neutral sites for this playoff they do every year.
Yeah, I wonder if that was a compromise to get out of,
I don't know,
you know, of existing agreements or something to keep the bowls. Yeah, you know, to keep
the
bowls. And I do wonder what, you know, it's not top of mind, but there probably would be some damage to, like, if you separated the bowls from the college football playoff and it was, you know, the Rose Bowl featured, you know, the best Big Ten team not in the playoff against the best Big 12 team not in the playoff something like that. You know what I mean? We were talking about how there's less sizzle than ever before the bowls.
Well, maybe it's time to this was the bowl era. It had a lot of great things. We really enjoyed it, but now we've moved off to the playoff era. And I saw somebody for fun put up like an NIT college football playoff, like another playoff behind the first one. And it has some great teams and great matchups. It would have been amazing.
I'm team mid-major national championship. You give me 4 or 8 of the best non-major conference teams that didn't make the college football playoff bracket and let them play a tournament.
If you're going to
let them win call it some sort of national championship, you know, of its own. Like I'm fine with it.
If you're going to have these gigantic conferences, right? And right now, maybe that'll change. But right now, you can only have one conference championship. You only play for one national championship. Why not have some more opportunities for teams to win championships, to compete, to be, you know, the top team in whatever tournament they're in? You know, it's just like basketball, NBA now has a special cup competition. Soccer internationally has a ton of different things going on. You got the regular league, Champions League, one or two cups, depending on your country. So I just think college football should have more opportunities for players and teams to compete for championships.
All right, we're just underway and barely scratching the surface. As we said, Portal Monday, we'll talk basketball. Hey, we'd love for you to join in as well. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Bill, Dan, and Brian here on the Monday Drive. Come on in and join us.
Remember when you would dream about what you would grow up to be?
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. A rainy Monday, and so be careful if you're out and about. I mean, it's not terribly cold or anything, just a lot of rain. Looks like we're going to have more tomorrow before things turn a little colder. We were talking college football playoff. The bracket is set for that. If you want to get your thoughts in about that, we'd love to hear from you. But speaking of college football, all right, recruiting, the signing period, Brian, wrapped up. We have not talked to you since then. Auburn with, I guess it was 25 additions to the class. What did you think about Auburn's signing class?
Well, I thought, considering the circumstances, the way Auburn's finished, for four consecutive seasons, I thought it was really good. I mean, I know it's not the finish anybody wanted. I know there were a lot of rumors that Auburn was going to flip this guy or that guy, and it didn't quite work out. I think the kid they got from Tennessee, the defensive lineman.
Darian Smith.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a good player. And the reason I think that is because Rodney Gardner's recruiting him. And I know Rodney is a great judge of talent. And so I think even though we have him a three-star, I don't know what he is across the other networks, I think he might be a guy to keep an eye on that outplays that ranking. But I think they've helped themselves. They finally went out and got a star quarterback. They got four what I think is really good defensive linemen. I think they got some more really good defensive backs that can play right away. I think Auburn's secondary is going to be good and young next year. I mean, really good and young. I love what
although we were talking about the possibility of, in the aftermath of Caleb going into the portal, maybe Auburn.
A safety. Auburn could use probably an experienced safety. They've got two very, very highly thought of incoming safeties to go with Caleb Harris.
And I think Sylvester's future is probably at safety too. So I mean they got to figure that out. But you know, like you said, you know, they might be, even though they feel good about the young additions at safety, that's a spot where they might be shopping.
And they did offer a cornerback today, I saw out of the portal. Rayon Strader out of Miami, Ohio. I don't know a lot about him. I just know Auburn has offered him. So it looks like they're looking to fill out some areas with some help.
Auburn is pretty active, much more active than we've ever seen them at the outset of a portal this time.
But quarterback and offensive tackle should be, I think they are, but should be absolutely the
much
top
more,
priority.
Yeah, much more so now that it's official with Hank Brown going in the portal following Holden Gurner. Auburn only has two scholarship quarterbacks, and that's Walker White and the incoming Deuce Knight.
Yep, and Deuce will be here. I don't know exactly his arrival date, but he'll be here for the start of spring semester. We'll be competing right away, and the plan for Auburn is to have four quarterbacks in that room. I'm sure they'd like to have all four of them for the spring. Maybe that doesn't work out, but they would like to assign a number one quarterback out of the portal, and then maybe a guy with multiple years of eligibility that could be potentially a starter in the future.
And we're seeing reports that Ashton Daniels from Stanford, I believe, is going to be on campus by the end of this week.
Yes, he is scheduled to visit. I don't know the exact date, but I think maybe Friday.
I think Friday is what I've seen. And Daniels is a guy that's he's originally from Buford, Georgia.
Right.
Been at Stanford. He would have 1 year of eligibility. He's a guy that has a lot of experience, but he doesn't have eye-popping numbers.
No,
I mean, he's around
a
60% for his career with almost even touchdowns to interceptions.
No, I didn't realize he just had 1 year of eligibility left, so that changes how I look at him. But I don't look at him as Auburn's number one target.
No, I look at him as a guy that Auburn would like to have in competing for playing time.
Sure.
But he's not the guy, I don't think, that you're bringing in. They want to bring in somebody that they know he's the man. Yep. He is the guy.
They have to, in my opinion. They cannot afford to miss in this portal.
And it's interesting, there are projections already for Jackson Arnold to Mississippi State.
Which is interesting.
Jeff Lebby, the Oklahoma connection there.
That's right.
And there are, I mean, too many quarterbacks who can move the needle, switch teams, right? Every single year. And you know, you can reset and take a huge jump at that position if you make the right move, and we'll see if Auburn can find whoever it is that represents that. Brian, you wrote a really interesting piece about Auburn recruiting in state and the importance of keeping sort of like it's the second straight year. Hugh Freeze has had a lot of success with the top in-state players, and that's something that I know folks who have followed recruiting for a long time have sort of clamored for Auburn to get a to do better with the local resources.
They really have, and for those that are old timers like me, so to speak,
or older timers like me,
yeah.
Hey, a split in the state was
exactly.
A win for Auburn.
It really was for so many years, and that to me is definitely changing. I think it was 6 of the top 10. I don't have my story in front of me, but I think it was 6 of the top 10 that Auburn signed in this last class. They're up to 2 or 3 already of the top 12 in next year's class. And they had a pretty good in-state class with guys like Cam Coleman, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I was going to say, Simmons. Look at the Birmingham's Elite 11. Auburn got 9.
Yeah. So they're doing a terrific job. Alabama, I think, only signed one of the top.
Alabama or
no,
only
two
signed
of the top.
Two players from the state of Alabama, I think. Yeah. Is what Alabama. Now, here's something I saw, though, Brian, that is a concern for me. And you know this, how important the state of Georgia has been for Auburn. Auburn did not sign one of the top 25 players out of the state of Georgia for the first time I can ever recall.
Yeah, and that's been a hotbed. You look at the best Auburn teams, they usually have some really good players
usually,
from the state of Georgia.
Usually it'd be more from Alabama, but not that many fewer from Georgia. Yep. And Auburn's always been able to pull one or two of those guys away. So
yeah. I don't know if that was just a blip. I don't know that there's a reason for that.
Georgia Tech, I'll give Brent Kelly some credit. Yeah. They kept more players home this year than usual, and he's done a heck of a job there at Tech.
Yes, he really has.
The portal, I don't think that the situation is what you wait for a couple. You're going to be waiting a couple of weeks to hear on some guys. A lot of these players that are entering the portal are entering having a pretty good idea of where they want to go, and if they hear what they want to hear, they're gone.
I think Auburn wants to get most of the big business done within 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the plan. If it doesn't work out that way, then it's probably not going as well as they want it to go. And I'm not saying that if they're getting a wide receiver in January or something, that's fine. I'm talking about quarterback,
offensive tackle, yes.
Some other key spots too. They've obviously targeting a nose guard and a big defensive tackle too.
I think they really need a nose guard. I was looking at the roster, and Auburn has Bobby Jamison Travis.
That's one on coming back. And then you got big old Jordan Crawford.
Yeah, but I mean, Parker, he's an incoming freshman, and Malik Autry. Those guys, I mean, you got a couple of freshmen, but Bobby Jamison Travis is really the only nose type player that Auburn even has on the roster right now.
Yep. And if you watch that defense this year, they rotated those guys a lot.
Uh-huh.
They need numbers there.
They could risk it at safety with some of the younger guys, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
But
I look at
inside linebacker and inside defensive line as two spots where they probably need either a veteran who can come in and play like a starter for a year or a young guy who can stick around for a little bit longer. Almost everywhere else. I mean, you got Keldrick and Kieron Crawford. I feel like on each side of the defensive line, if you mm-hmm. hold on to both of them.
Well, you're not as strong as you'd like to be at buck linebacker. If you really look at it, you've got Kieron Crawford, who you think can take his big step forward, but you don't know that for sure.
And then
two true freshmen, redshirt freshmen behind him.
I would think
one coming off an injury.
Mm-hmm. I would think Kieron's your starter next year if they wanted to add to the position.
And then you got Jared Smith coming in.
Yeah, and then they recruited.
I wonder if J.J. Falk might get a look there, too.
Yeah.
Possibly. But they did recruit J.J. as like an inside.
But, I mean, he's a guy that's got that kind of burst.
Oh, he definitely does. Definitely does.
So, there's some spots. I think receiver is another place where, now that you've had Camden Brown and Caleb Burton into the portal.
Which we kind of expected.
Along with KLS, and who else used their eligibility up?
Robert Lewis.
And
four out and three are coming in through the signing class.
That's
so
right.
There is room for one more if you want to hold nine again.
At least one more.
Yep.
And Auburn's reached out. You've seen quite a few receivers mentioned.
Horatio Fields, Wake Forest, coming in for a visit next week. Eric Singleton from Georgia Tech is another target.
He is a really good player.
Yep.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to Spectre before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Well, another year has gone by, and we've seen what happens with the quarterback room. Hank Brown's gone, which I predicted that. He'd probably go to UAB.
Maybe.
I don't know why White's sticking around. I can see us getting another Peyton Thorne through the portal and start this whole game all over again.
Well, if Auburn doesn't get somebody who can help lead them to significantly more wins than they did this year, there may be somebody else getting started.
I can't stress this enough, but this is the most important signing that Auburn's had in quite a while. And to be quite honest, these coaches, this is going to depend on their future here at Auburn. Honest about it.
With all due respect, you know, we had this same conversation when they signed White. All great things were going to happen, so on and so forth. And White got on the field one time.
Well, see, it's tough to expect a true freshman to contribute as a quarterback, Spector, isn't it? I mean,
No, it's not. Look at South Carolina.
He was a redshirt freshman.
Well, what did he do as a freshman? Nothing.
That's right. That's what most freshmen do is learn, you know, try to learn the system. And that's what Walker's been trying to do.
Yeah, and I think Walker's going to get a chance to compete for the starting job. Obviously, the plan is to go with a starter, you know, out of the portal. You know, that seems like what Auburn's going to try to do. But I could see Walker getting, especially if it's a one-year guy, Walker and Deuce Knight could compete to be the backup and could compete to be the next guy up. And I think one of them could very well be your starter in 2026.
And credit Walker. I think Walker's also waiting to see who comes in. Now, there's no guarantee. There's another portal, remember, in the spring, and you still got till the 29th of this month to go in the portal.
Right.
If Auburn went out and signed a surefire slam dunk, this guy's a starter that has multiple years of eligibility left, hey, Walker may jump into the portal.
Sure. I get the – oh, go ahead, Spector.
Yeah, I understand that. I see your point. But it's all for naught if we don't do something with our offensive line.
You're right.
No matter how good of a quarterback we're going to have, or we suspect we're going to have, or we can get one in the portal or not, if we don't have an offensive line, guys, you guys talk up the defense all the time, which is good. We've got a good defense. But we never put the emphasis on our offense. And it needs to be put out there that we need to get the – we've got a bunch of freshmen. I don't know what they're doing. I have no idea. They don't play on the field. We got one freshman that played. And out of eight or nine we had. So I don't know what's going on. We need to bring back the JV teams.
Well, no, I'm curious. Spector, you raise an excellent point about the offensive line, and I want to kick it to Brian real quick because I'd like to know, like, who do you view of the guys on the roster right now? Because you mentioned offensive tackle as a target in the portal. Who do you view as guys on the team right now on the offensive line as potential starters in 2025?
I hate to say this, but I just feel like Auburn's offensive line is a big issue now. They inherited a really bad situation. They made it better, but I just don't feel it's good enough. I don't think the top is good enough. The top of if you take Auburn's offensive line depth chart, I don't think the top is good enough to compete at the top of the SEC. And I'm not sure the bottom has enough guys who are ready to
I think Connor Liu is fine. Play. Connor Liu is your anchor there at center.
Rising junior.
And then a lot of it's going to depend on do Jeremiah Wright and Dylan Wade come back? If so, are they inside guys? And if that's the case, the first offensive lineman that I see that's going to visit Auburn is going to be another guard.
Yeah, which is very surprising. But that tells me what they think about the situation they have on offensive line.
They still need to improve.
Because in my mind, the only two guys that I would feel great about coming back and starting, Connor Lewis center, and Dylan Wade if he's a guard. To me, everything else needs to be wide open, competition, bringing the best guy you can get to compete.
Go ahead, Spector.
That's right. You're right. But let me say this, Brian. Yep. Our offensive line has been a big issue since Bo Nix was here.
I know. It's been before that. It's been before that, yeah.
Yeah, and it hasn't improved. I mean, we got one or two guys that have stepped up. It takes more than one or two guys. It takes five.
Yep, it takes a unit. That's exactly right.
It's been an issue, especially with offensive tackle recruiting.
Mm-hmm. And pass pro. Yep. My goodness.
It was rough.
We're up against a break, Spector. Great stuff. Thanks for the phone call. And I would point out before we take the break that it's also that's not something that often gets fixed with the portal. Like that's something that tends to be like you can find a starter
if you find the right guy. If you found a solid left tackle who could pass pro, I think you could be all right.
But when you're talking about needing two or three to get, you know, to like you'd like to be getting some of that in house, right?
Yeah. And I wonder you would like to. I just don't think they've done a good enough job recruiting.
And I wonder. I mean,
they've signed guys that just aren't there.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see another year of Tyler Johnson,
Dre Carter.
DeAndre Carter is certainly a young player that could step up.
Seth Wilfrid's a guy that redshirted this year,
yeah.
Who's just a sophomore.
We forgot.
Jay Redwin, maybe he.
Yeah.
We don't know about those guys. That they may have that future, but they need to be really good next year.
We forgot about Seth Wilfrid a little
bit,
but he redshirted this year. Mm-hmm. He was a top junior college or a top junior college offensive tackle.
He should have 3 years of eligibility left. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
When life throws you a curveball, you need someone you can count on. The Richard Tate Allstate Agency in Auburn protects
90. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. 334-321-1390. Who have we got?
John.
Hey, John. Next.
I was watching that Georgia-Texas game, and I know you guys talked about this a little bit last week. I just feel like there's got to be a better way in college football to finish these overtime games, especially, you know, in the CFP. Do we want a national championship decided by two-point conversions?
I don't.
Yeah, who has the best, like, number three two-point conversion?
I don't know the answer, but I felt like the system they had before, where it would just keep going back to 25, was the best system we've had. And I don't care that there were two games that went six or seven overtimes, you know? It's just as bad when you have to do these over and over again with the two-point conversions.
I'm a proponent, John, of – I think the system was mostly right before. If they don't want to start teams, like, out of field goal range because they think it's going to take too long, first and goal at the 10. Just back and forth, go first and goal at the 10, four play. And if you throw an interception, the other team kick a field goal. Like that's, you know,
just an interception, the other team can return it for a touchdown or whatever, just like an extra point. Although, and speaking of extra points, I mean, why have extra points?
Just
go ahead and go for it. Make it mandatory. You're going for two.
Or just have it be field goals and touchdowns only and don't even have extra points in the overtime period.
Oh, no, I think that adds that.
You like the extra point?
Chance of ending it.
Then field goals, touchdowns, and 2-point conversions only. First and goal at the 10. Play till there's a winner.
Idea that I've never heard any expression of out there. Just wanted to run it by y'all. I think the 25 is great, but I think with each successive overtime period, just advance it a down. So you start second overtime, second and 10 from the 25, and third and 10, and fourth and 10. And it really allows your specialist, it puts more pressure on it, and it would definitely end games more quickly. And I think be more appeasing to fans.
Yeah, that's interesting. I also thought about moving it back 5 yards every down. And I think other people have thought about moving it forward every series. But I like moving it back, but I don't know what the answer is.
That gives you less chance of kicking field goals.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if you moved it back, would that just a bunch of guys, they just wouldn't score and
then
keep
I wonder,
going? I don't know.
I guess the other idea would be what ties in the regular season and then NFL overtime.
I like ties in the regular season. I don't see any reason why you don't have ties in the regular season. You're concerned about the safety of the players. Look, a tie used to count as a half win and a half loss. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can do percentages that way. And it also makes it less likely that you're going to have multiple teams tied when you're trying to figure out, you know, who's playing for championship.
Interesting.
Plus, somewhere in Auburn is a box of ties that Syracuse sent.
There you go.
Pat Dye, was it 40-something years ago now? I don't know how long ago it was, but
it would be an interesting data point for the committee, too, to think about some of these teams, you know, with the over, you know, like Ole Miss, right? The overtime loss to LSU would be a tie.
35 years ago. Was it 89?
I don't know. Like, it's an interesting idea, too.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Great stuff, John.
What year was that? Was it 87?
I'll look it up.
The Auburn-Syracuse tie?
Yeah.
Is that the – ooh.
It was crazy because it was a year by 89.
1988.
88.
Is that right?
Okay. But it was after the 87 season, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because
January 88.
It's funny because after the by 1989, and I'm in a ticket office, I don't know how many season ticket holders we heard from that were like, can we please go to some bowl other than the Sugar Bowl? I'm bored of going to New Orleans. I'm tired of going to the Sugar Bowl. And you know what? You got your wish. Now, not too shortly after that. It hadn't been many times. I got to the point where, the last two times we went to the Sugar Bowl, it wasn't a whole lot of fun.
So it was after the 87 season, I think? And they tied Syracuse. Because 88 was the Sugar Bowl against Florida State. I remember that quite well. I was there. And I still think Deion Sanders interfered on at least one of those passes, maybe two.
It was close, very close. That team was also very close.
That team was really good. That may have been the best team, other than the national championship team, that I've seen here at Auburn in person.
We've got a full bank of calls. Let's get things started with Kyle. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, guys. How crazy is it that we're already talking about the playoffs? I mean it. It doesn't seem like that long ago we were talking about the home opener. This year just seemed like it went by a lot faster. I don't know why, but
I'll tell you what, it goes by faster. Everything goes faster for me as I've gotten older. I don't know if that relates to everybody else, but it really does.
Well, you know, and the college football season is three. You know, it's like 3-4 game laps. You know, what I mean, like that's sort of how you and Auburn.
Yeah.
Auburn's first lap was over in a blink. Right? Like that first lap is the it ends with
and they fell down on their face and got all scraped up and had to get mom and dad down from the. Like the bleachers to help us across the finish line.
Like the first lap was Arkansas, and the first lap ends with Arkansas, which felt like a season opener in a lot of ways. And I mean, and then you're playing Oklahoma in your fifth game, and by that point the season's almost halfway. I remarked during the Georgia game to somebody, it's like the season's halfway done. Yeah. Like we're still asking the same questions we were asking week one about like when's the team gonna do this or that, and it's in game six.
It's so true. I was thinking about this last night. Do y'all ever think, and I don't want to say it's anytime soon, but do y'all think there will be a chance of maybe eliminating some of these bowl games where they actually put in more ranked teams into the playoff? And like I said, some of the lower tier bowl games that they'll start eliminating. And like I said, not anytime soon, but do you think it's a possibility down the road?
It would.
I think it all depends on ESPN and TV.
Exactly, because I think that the interest is not, there's not a ton of interest, but ESPN is looking for inventory, and
the bowls have to be a monster money loser for somebody though, right? Like some of these like the lightly attended ones. I mean,
you would think
maybe the TV networks can make it worthwhile. Like maybe there's enough interest.
Let's face it, Vegas loves the fact that there's more for people to bet on. ESPN loves to have the inventory, so that's why they're still there.
I think that's the saving grace. I really do. Like, that's such a big thing now betting the games and all that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's in the equation definitely. So,
although the games become so difficult to bet when half the roster sits out, for some of these bowl games. And I think they're going to have to figure out a way. And I wonder if what's the tournament Alabama was in Vegas in basketball? The players era thing. I wonder if you're going to start seeing bowl games coming with, if they want players to participate, bowl games are going to have to come with a guarantee.
We're going to have to contribute. NIL is going to be,
Well, every team playing in that players era got $1 million for their NIL funds from the, all eight of the teams that played in that thing got $1 million each. That's the report. That was there instead of.
I don't see what the NCAA could do about it if they said, you play in this game, every player's going to get X amount of money.
Not
paying more for the quarterback than you are anybody else, but just getting everybody there.
Maui and Atlantis are more prestigious because they've been around longer and they have they have history, but schools pay to be in those tournaments, and the idea that you could instead have a tournament that's paying you,
that's going to change things real quick.
And I wonder if bowl games could sort of go through that sort of disruption too, if they want to stay relevant outside of the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted your guys' take on that, so I appreciate it, guys.
Good hearing from you, Kyle. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Back with more of your phone calls here on the Monday Drive. Experience.
facts and knowledge from the pros.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. I think we lost Ty. So, Ty, if you get a chance, give us a call back. James is next here on the drive. Hey, James.
Hey, guys. Question for you. I know that Hank Brown left, or he's announced that he's been going to portal. Is this a line of thinking, or is this just something I just came up with myself? What about Sam Jackson moving back to quarterback? And then just getting one from
the he have no does Sam Jackson
he did he's not go through senior day so he has I've still got him on there so
I do too.
I don't think so his plan was to try to break in at receiver and maybe become a pro prospect
I think that's what he felt his best opportunity to continue playing football was to move from quarterback.
Okay. I was just curious, like, maybe if that was an option. Because getting two portal quarterbacks, I mean, it's possible. I just don't know if you're going to find – I don't know how you're going to find one that might have to play backup.
Well, Ole Miss signed three last year, didn't they? Yeah. Three from the portal.
One thing you got to remember about Auburn and a lot of these top schools, just being on that roster pays you a lot of money, and it's a lot more money than you'll get at any Group of Five school or a lot money than – maybe not a lot, but – a significant amount more than maybe you would get at a ACC or Big 12 school.
It would be a surprise for Auburn to sign two guys who played a lot last year and profile as starters in 2025. But I think a journeyman who's been around college football and could give you, could give you who could contribute in an emergency. I think would be what would be an easier thing to sign than the kind of high-profile, big-time starter, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you could sign both of those over the course of one December.
Yeah, I didn't know. I appreciate it, guys. Yeah. I was just thinking about that.
Good hearing from you, James. We will step aside for our top of the hour break. Halfway done. Come on in and join us in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of this Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what is, and it's been just an ugly day. Rain all day long. At least it's not terribly cold, but it's been steady rain. And look for more of the same. My phone says rain and thunder tomorrow. So then it's going to cool off. But
it's definitely feeling like winter right now.
Oh, it does. I mean, this is finals weather.
Yeah,
that's what's going on. The first couple of days of finals weather's got to be nasty, and you've got to students are going to have to trudge through this slop.
I can remember
to get to their finals.
When a student, I'd park over there, and you have to walk around the stadium toward campus. That wind would blow.
Oh yeah. So good luck on finals, students.
Yes.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive, second hour of the show. Brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join in, lively first hour, as we talked CFP, a little transfer portal. Didn't really get into basketball much, as Auburn back home for the first time in nearly 3 weeks yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Thrashing Richmond. I'm really sorry I didn't get to go. Dan was able to go over it. You used the ESPN 106.7 pass and got in yesterday. I hadn't realized until midweek that Sonny Smith going to be honored there at halftime. Shame that it happened on a Sunday morning. We just couldn't make it yesterday.
A beautiful tribute to the one and only Coach Sonny Smith. And if we get a chance to talk to Andy tomorrow,
right.
He was there handing the honorary basketball to Sonny after a really nice video played at halftime of the men's game. And then Sonny and his family were there at midcourt, mm-hmm. and they get a well-deserved standing ovation and a salute from the university and a couple of parting gifts saluting the years of service that Sonny Smith.
Sonny's a Hall of Famer, and rightfully so.
I mean, just the best. And
just, yeah, it's just great, great person, Sonny Smith.
And very generous with his time on this show.
Oh,
as,
yes.
As well. You know, he's been willing to come on so many different times to talk basketball with us. So, yeah, you know, it's a new era of Auburn basketball on the radio without the coach. But Andy and Randall are doing a great job. And, yeah, just a really, really nice tribute to Coach yesterday.
And the team's doing pretty good, too.
Yes, they are.
Oh, my goodness. Auburn, I mentioned it earlier, staying number two in the latest poll,
yep.
as Tennessee jumps the Tigers. But as I was telling some folks earlier today, I don't think Bruce minds that little chip, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder to feel like they've still got, you know, something to prove to some people,
yeah.
even though they have played an extremely difficult schedule to this point. And yesterday, just dominating Richmond, six players in double figures for the Tigers yesterday.
Yeah, they used their depth. They got up and down the floor, played great defense. Richmond shot under 30% from the field, from the floor, during the game. Auburn made 13 three-pointers. I think that's the second most this season.
They've shot 15 turnovers well so far.
Yeah, they have. And it was great to see Ja'Kai Howard back out there. He got 21 minutes, which is the most all mm-hmm. season. I think in the last six or seven games since the opener, he's only got 2 minutes in one game in Maui, and that was it. But he was back out there. You could see how athletic he is. He's a guy that can take the ball from the perimeter and drive in and make one of those plays that can change the momentum of a game.
He can also hit a three.
Yes. Yes, he did. Made
one of two.
One of two. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
But, I mean, he has a nice shot.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he is just a ridiculous athletic ability.
He really does. And it was good to hear from the players. We didn't talk to him, but we talked to some other players, and they talked about how hard he worked, what a good attitude he had over the last several weeks while he was basically sitting and watching and waiting for his time. And then when he got his opportunity, he took full advantage of it. So that's a good sign to see of maybe a young guy taking a step forward in his maturity.
Bruce Pearl needs more than three. He needs more than four players at the three, mm-hmm. at the three guard spots in his offense.
Yep.
His team needs more than four guys to share those, you know, 120 minutes at the one, the two, and the three.
Yeah.
And with J.P. Pegues kind of out of the rotation.
Just got 4 minutes.
Right now.
Yeah, it's really looking like the Auburn's moving more toward an eight-man rotation, and that yeah. includes Ja'Kai.
Yep, and that includes Chris Moore, who got, I think, 12 minutes. And then, you know, Jaheim Hudson also involved in the altercation with Ja'Kai. Maybe he still has a point in time this season where he can come in and be more valuable. Well, piece in rotation. We'll
it
see.
Would still be a nine-man rotation if Chris Moore is getting rotational
yes,
minutes.
Right.
That would be the thing. Like at the moment, if his numbers sort of trend downward, you could see a scenario where it's eight with occasional contributions from Turtle and Chris Moore and J.P. Pegues,
right.
but sort of eight guys in double digits consistently.
Which is fine, especially once you get to the end of the season. Right now, you want to try to have a little bit more so you don't get worn down, but yeah.
Yeah, nobody played more than, let's see, Denver played the most minutes yesterday with 26.
Yeah.
So that's great. I mean, it's crazy when you look at it and you see your leading rebounder has six, you're thinking, oh, that could be a problem. No, not when, I guess, like six or seven guys had like
five or six
rebounds.
And five or six assists, too.
Yeah.
And
Auburn
Pettiford
had 23 assists on 33 made baskets.
The team is so unselfish, the way they share the ball. There was a point in the game where I think 17 of 22 or 23 made baskets had been assisted. Like, I mean, Auburn was, I mean, especially early on, like they overwhelmed Richmond, and that was one of the ways. And the outside shooting comes from so many different spots on this
mm-hmm.
team. You know, Denver.
That's right. It's not just one. Just not just one player.
No, it's not. And it's not just two. I mean, and I know there were more than two guys on the Final Four team. Right? No, it wasn't just Bryce. It wasn't just Jared and Bryce.
No, it was not.
Shots on that team. But you need more than you know. It can't just be your one outside shooting threat. And with Denver and Chad and Miles
and Kelly, Tahad.
Tahad is getting better every week, and yeah. It's so fun to see. And Jani Broome able to step outside and hit a basket as well. He's got the green light from the 3-point line.
But Miles is, I mean, what an appropriate name, because he looks like he could hit him from miles.
Yeah,
I mean,
it really does.
Deep is and they're just the net barely moves when he's on.
And when you talk to him after games, you can see how excited he is to be here. I think he really loves to be on a team that he feels like, and his teammates, coaches feel like, can compete at the highest levels.
Yeah, I mean, he was the guy for the last couple of years at Georgia Tech, but he was a marked man. I mean, everybody did – they'd double-team him. They'd work out, you know, whatever to try to stop him. And as a result, I mean, you know, Tech couldn't get over the hump. He didn't have enough help.
Yeah.
Now he doesn't have to be the man. He's just one of many.
He started like 60 games in 2 years at Georgia Tech, and they weren't a championship contender in that time, but it wasn't necessarily because of Miles Kelly.
Yeah, he played a lot of minutes too.
Yeah, he's a really, really useful piece, you know, to add to a team that was really good last year in this Auburn team. Yeah, it just looks – I mean, what a year for the SEC. So far, you've got nine SEC teams in the AP top 25 right now.
And if I'm not mistaken, a 10th, who is 8-1, knocked off last week's number one team.
Talking about Missouri.
Yeah.
Missouri beating.
How is Missouri not ranked?
Missouri got votes in
they're 8-1. They beat Kansas and they're not in the top 25.
I think
it's just because voters don't want to put a 10th SEC team in the top 25.
I think it was because the game was on Sunday afternoon.
Probably.
And maybe voters had already filled out their polls on on Sunday morning or something.
If they'd already filled out their polls and Kansas dropped a 10th with one loss.
It's true. Well, that's a good point. I mean, Kansas felt the brunt of it, but apparently Missouri did not get the bounce back. Yeah, Missouri is, let me see, in both polls, Missouri is the fourth team receiving votes in the AP poll behind Baylor, Arizona State, and Memphis. And in the coaches poll, Missouri is further down the line.
That's
there.
Crazy.
Mississippi State not ranked in the coaches poll either. Yeah, there's about 10 teams getting more votes in the outside the top 25 than Missouri.
Well, the SEC. I mean, SEC basketball looks better than ever. I mean, ever. This year.
Yeah, what a win. What a win for, I mean, and that was a team you felt like, I mean, we talked about it on the Observer podcast last week, that there was a point where I think Auburn's only conference home game that wasn't going to be a quad one win was the Missouri game. Like, because the computer,
I think it probably will.
Because the computer numbers, yeah, I think, I mean, if Missouri and South Carolina improve between now and the start of conference play, if they can help their computer numbers up, you could get to a point where every SEC league game is a quad one game. Like, that's where you, I mean, when you've got nine teams in the top 25 and realistically 12 of them, 13 of them competing as tournament at-larges right now, you're going to have a league that just is bananas in the computer numbers, and that's where the SEC is.
What's going to happen is there will be some conference losses. I mean, there will be some games that get lost in the conference, and outsiders may go, well, if your conference champ is 14-4 or 13-5, how good can that conference be? Well, it's because so many teams in this conference are going to be tough to beat, especially on the road.
Man, the SEC, just think about the SEC now compared to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
When it was
Kentucky and maybe Tennessee or maybe Arkansas and the rest, right?
Well, the year there was like the tornado at the Georgia Dome, right, during the SEC mm-hmm. tournament. I mean, and you had to play the rest of them at Georgia Tech's building. And, I mean, there were years where I feel like the SEC got two or three in a couple times. Yeah. Like, I mean, you think about the investment. And Bruce Pearl's an example of this. But, you know, in the second half of the 2010s, early part of the 2020s, like, so many schools went out and got highly proven mm-hmm. winners to be their head coaches. And it turned into something of an arms race. And Auburn, you know, you're seeing the benefit of that now with the league, you know, clearly at the top this season. You know, you don't want to make proclamations about what's going to happen, but they, you know, right now the SEC looks like the best conference of college basketball.
Love for you to join in here in hour number two of the Monday Drive. Call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. And we'll get to it. Is it Matt up first? Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. Been, of course, talking about recruiting. Can I assume that most of the people that we just recently signed will be starting in January and nobody will be holding out till summer?
I think there are only three of the signees that won't be in January. And trying to recall.
Couldn't tell you exactly which one it is.
It seems like a couple of linemen, offensive linemen, who you wouldn't be expecting to see this coming year.
Well, Kyle Ellis is one, right? Because he's still got to graduate.
Yeah, he reclassified.
Right. I can't remember the other two, though. But, yeah, the majority and really the key players, of course, Deuce Knight will be here for January and go through workouts and then spring practice. That's a big one.
He'll be here. The safeties, I mean, Eric Winters and Fagans will be here.
Yep. I did New boy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I noticed that too. I've got it on my depth chart. I noticed Auburn released, the official release had new boy Fagans and Duke Smith.
Yep.
So let me ask you a question about the whole transfer thing. I'm like everybody else worried about a quarterback or two. Mm-hmm. I saw a report somewhere that maybe the quarterback they may be interested in, quote, hasn't hit the portal yet.
What
would anybody be waiting on? Would it be because they're still playing or because maybe they hadn't made up their mind but they want to move or not?
It would be because they're a starter at a pretty good school and they're just waiting to see what type of offer they can get, right?
Yeah, that's really what I've heard, Matt, is that, look, let's face it, there are negotiations that are going on, offers being made, not necessarily directly from the school or from the coach, but players are finding out what it would be worth if they entered the portal to a certain school. Yep. So those are the kinds of things that are going on now. And that's why many times when a big name hits the portal, almost immediately they announce where they're going.
Yeah, just like everybody else, we can't miss this time around. I mean, we sort of didn't do well in our last transfer, so I feel like we, like everybody else, we're going to have to hit maybe not a home run, but a triple on this one. Last question, I'll hang out. Appreciate you taking my call. The kid that reclassified the running back, is that still a chance that we might be interested in him from, I think he's a
from Auburn,
he an
High.
Auburn guy anyway?
Auburn High, yes. Omar Mabson, who had a fabulous year, 30-plus touchdowns this year. I mean, a tremendous year. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
About interest from Auburn. Alabama. I know Alabama had been recruiting him.
And Auburn did offer him back in the summer.
Right.
But
haven't heard anything since the word about him reclassifying has come out, though.
Huh. Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. I do think Auburn could use another running back, Brian. Could.
That's someone in the text box pointed, the Smith brothers.
Duke. I mean, we just mentioned Duke, Eric, and Duke Smith.
Yeah, they're not reclassifying, right? Are they not early enrollees?
Yeah, they are.
Are they okay? That was the question we had in the text box.
No, because I think all the skill players are. I'll find it somewhere. There were just three players, and there were two offensive linemen. So that I don't think I'm 99% sure that it wasn't going to be like one Smith brother is coming in now and the other one later. I'm pretty sure they're both in. Well, we'll see if we can find that. We need to get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Bill, Dan, Brian, here on the Monday Drive.
A well-made patio cover looks great, helps.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 21 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brian, while we don't have any calls, let's get the scoop on this week's Monday Musings.
Have y'all read it yet?
I have.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet.
I want everybody to hear about that, of course, which is sponsored by Uncle Keith's
Delicious
Red Sauce.
Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, which we'll talk about, but this one's kind of a tough one. We go back 45 years to the day a hit song from a band undergoing a renaissance with a new lead singer was certified gold. And to give you more of a hint, this would be a
AC/DC?
No, the little title you had me thinking of a different song because there was a song that was titled the little quote that you put up there, something else. That's like the next thing after the title.
Yes, 1979.
79, new lead singer. Were they popular with the old lead singer?
Like, they had a couple of big hits.
Couple
of big hits before.
And it's not AC/DC.
Kind of a funk band. No, more of a funk.
Okay.
They had brass in their group.
Who is it?
And one of the guys had a really...
Is that Jungle Boogie?
That was before the new singer.
Is that Cool in the Gang?
That is Cool in the Gang.
That's Cool in the Gang, yeah.
And this was Ladies' Night.
Oh, yeah, okay.
See, when you put Oh, What a Night, I'm thinking, are you going back to like the Four Seasons in December 63? But no.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. That's a good one. But they hired J.T. Taylor as their lead singer. Yeah,
the flip side, by the way, of
So
Ladies
was Cool
Night,
ever the lead singer of Cool in the Gang?
No.
He was the saxophone.
Yes.
Saxophone, yeah. And then his cool brother was one of the singers.
Because that's what I was thinking when it's like when you
cool
have
Cool and Ronald were the brothers, from I believe.
If you're gonna have multiple, it's like if Cool's the lead singer, then you're gonna switch him out for other like.
It was just Cool's band.
Yeah.
But he can do that anyway. The flip side of Ladies' Night was Too Hot.
Too hot, baby. Too hot.
You don't think the lead singer's not. You think the lead singer's gonna be cool when you hear Cool in the Gang?
You don't think
he's gonna be in the gang
when you hear the name. You think that's got to be the lead singer, but there are a lot of cases where there have been bands where the name of the person is not necessarily the singer.
We had a caller earlier in the show, and we talked about it a little bit during the commercial break, but the idea that like if Auburn goes and gets a portal quarterback in the next few weeks, it represents sort of Auburn cutting bait on Walker or Deuce, right? Like I do wonder sort of like what is the plan for a freshman quarterback or a redshirt freshman quarterback? Like does it depend on who you sign from the portal?
Oh, I'm sure if you didn't sign anybody from the portal, it'd have to be somebody there. Go ahead.
I would say this is how you have to look at it. Auburn has lost four consecutive losing seasons. Mm-hmm. They cannot afford a fifth.
No.
The staff would not survive a fifth, in my opinion.
Hugh Freeze cannot afford a third consecutive losing season.
For many reasons. Recruiting, on the field, Auburn, money, all of it. So they have to go out and get the very best quarterback they can get possible and have that guy be somebody who's ready to step in and be the starter right away. They cannot bet their future at Auburn on a freshman or a journeyman or a guy they hope is good. They have to go out and get somebody that they know is going to be good.
Well, you need somebody, you really need somebody who has the offense down by the end of the spring.
Right.
It's going to be very difficult for a freshman to come in
and
do that. That doesn't mean freshmen can't contribute in their first year.
And we don't know.
But you don't usually see it from game one.
And we don't know what's going to happen as the season goes on.
Right.
Quarterbacks get hurt. Quarterbacks go in slumps, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why you want four quarterbacks. So you got two, one here, one coming in. He wants to get two in the portal.
334-321-1390. Back to the drive hotline. And Ty is up next.
G is next up.
Oh, I thought you pointed to Ty.
No, Ty was gone. I was pointing to G.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that, G.
Hey, no problem. How are y'all today?
Doing fine.
Good. I know there's a lot to talk about, but there was one thing that I had thought about over the weekend. And I don't know, I guess y'all talked about a little bit about the flag planting. I don't know if y'all have had a chance to even talk about that by Michigan on Ohio State the other day. And one of the things that I think on game day they were talking about it, these schools get fined like $100,000, and I believe Nick Saban was talking about how it's just a drop in the bucket.
Right.
So I thought, how in the world can you do to do this? And I thought, you need to make the players accountable for this, you know, instead of just having the schools fined. And so I was thinking, you know, when the schools start paying players, you could take a percentage of their NIL money away from them if they are found to, you know, instigate something like this. So just make the players accountable. What's y'all's What's y'all's thoughts? Well, how do you stop it?
Could do that, and then another school would say, well, if that happened to you, we would never do that to you and take your money. Why don't you come play for us instead?
That's a good point.
I mean, no, I mean, when it gets into, I think obviously,
come here, we'll give you money to do
that. That's right.
I mean, if the arrangements become more like arrangements in the professional league, then maybe fines could become more of a like a disciplinary practice in college athletics. I think as they are in the pro leagues, as it stands now, you know, punishments to the organizations to sort of keep the players in line is the way that they can do it. And I do wonder if we didn't really talk about it last week. I do wonder if flag planting as sort of a practice is going to be phased out if it's found to be a thing that keeps.
It's not even against the rules right now.
Yeah,
like if you read it's not against the rules. So it'll probably be something that's addressed in the off season. I thought what happened at Miami Ohio State game was, I mean, there is no reason for anybody to be pepper sprayed. These are young men wearing football uniforms, smacking each other. You know, it was crazy.
But I can understand an AD saying, or even a football coach saying, a sort of taking the Sark approach, which is, I don't want my team involved in situations like this. Right. And if you're actively flag planting on an opposing field, you're welcoming a situation like this to occur. So when you went on the road, let's celebrate in the locker room. Let's celebrate on the bus. Like Sark pulled his players off the field at College Station because he thought something like this could happen. And I think that's going to become the line across the industry as far as what you need to be doing as a coach.
The other thing is most of the flags are brought out by the cheerleaders. So you could just put the flag
band cheerleaders
2 minutes left in the game or something, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many options that somebody can get a hold of that thing and make it happen, you know. But I really think, though, that you just got to make the players accountable for it, and I think that would stop it.
That makes sense. Good to hear from you, Jeep.
Yep.
Let me you were right a little while ago, Dan. Apparently the Smith brothers –
Well, that was from the text box too. So shout out to the
Chuck. So the four players will not be early enrollees. Two offensive linemen, Cale Ellis and Jacoby Ward.
Right.
And then the twin brothers, Derek and Eric, Duke and Eric Smith. Yep. That'll be coming in the summer. 334-321-13. Not even Bob is up next. Hey Bob.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Pretty good.
I wanted to mainly ask about NIL, but I do want to agree with what you're saying about we really need a 9-win season minimum at Auburn. I mean, he's kind of going down. I see Hugh Freeze kind of going down the Jimbo path where you have great recruiting but doesn't translate. Are there – going back to NIL – are walk-ons eligible, and do we even have any walk-ons anymore?
You saw a couple of walk-on kickers this year, including the guy kicking field goals for you in the season.
A lot of your special teams, a lot of times snappers are, but Auburn had 30 to 40 walk-ons.
And we still don't have final decision from the SEC as far as roster limits and how that's all going to be handled yet. Last time we Coach Freeze spoke about it, he was still planning for an 85-man roster. Whereas the
85 scholarships.
Right.
But if revenue sharing comes to the sport soon, then your revenue sharing is going to be based on how many players are on the roster, and that's going to get rid of walk-ons because I think teams are going to want the roster to be as small as possible while still being capable.
Remember, football is going though to partial scholarships where it never has before. So I think most coaches, when we have Don Dunn with us, I mean, coaches don't feel like they can get by with much less than 100-man roster. You may have 100 or 105 roster, but 85 scholarships spread out over those 105.
Right, and the scholarships don't necessarily matter anymore because you have NIL.
And you have
revenue sharing. So even if you're not quote-unquote on scholarship, you're still getting money.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. That answers part of my question. So I know you may not know exactly, but just speculating, what do you think the minimum NIL is for a scholarship player at Auburn?
I don't have that. I don't know.
I really don't know. I mean, you hear some wild numbers, and we've seen a couple of reports from folks that that usually know what they're talking about that are saying a top, just to give you an idea, a top 25 quarterback is now expected to pull in between $1.5 million and $2.5 million a year.
I have to imagine journalistic outlets are going to be able to do some research over the next few months and figure out what the going rate but is, I mean, for a major conference college football player, SEC, Big Ten. Like, I'd be interested to know, and how that varies from the SEC average versus the Sun Belt average or the Mountain West average or the FCS average, things like that. Because right now we're speculating. Right now we have nothing but hearsay to base these answers off of.
I know the Stars are getting top dollar, and I don't really – I may not love this whole NIL thing, but I understand why they get the top share. But I'm curious, like, players 75 through 85 on scholarship, are they getting – 35,000, or are they getting 100,000?
I'd
actually closer to 100, but I could be wrong.
Well, I was going to say, it's hard for me to imagine that they're not probably getting at least. I mean, 35,000 would be less than 3,000 a month. So I would think, that's probably lowballing.
Under the rules of the system right now, that's between them and the IRS.
That is right.
that is not. Yeah, I mean, there's that's something people are pushing for. A clearinghouse, you know, where the NCAA could make sure all these deals are above board and none of them are with organizations that could welcome scandal or anything like that. Like those, you know, but right now it's Deadwood, right? Like right now it's the Wild West. And if someone's offering you a bag of money, there aren't that many questions that go along with it, Bob. Good stuff.
Well, I'm curious about that. I'll let you go because I know you need to, but you know, I sent four daughters to Auburn and it took them a long time to get one of them. Now is probably making $100K. And that took a long time. So I'm just curious, these guys who were leaving college used to making $100K. They got a big adjustment.
And it takes a while to get over that cost of sending them to college, too. My goodness. Bob, great stuff. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Right back with more of your phone calls. Come on in into the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes of the Monday Drive, and right back to the drive in Yellowhammer. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. In regard to the 12-team playoff, they're going to occupy a lot of the bowls, like the Rose Bowl, the prestigious bowls.
Yes, you know, the New Year's Six, yes, the big ones.
I don't know, the Amana Refrigerator Bowl in Coyote, Wyoming or something, you know. And I just wondered, what's left? Who's taken and what's left? Where would Alabama go? South Carolina, that kind of thing.
All been announced. And there are a couple of interesting things before Dan gets to who's playing where. Alabama apparently sort of was able to choose its opponent, and they passed on Miami, and they have Michigan. And where are they playing? They're playing in Tampa,
that's
right?
The former Outback Bowl in Tampa. Yeah, I mean, looking at, like, the top SEC teams that aren't in the playoff, Ole Miss and Duke are in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. LSU and Baylor are in the Texas Bowl. South Carolina and Illinois are
in the Citrus.
They're in the Citrus Bowl.
That's the biggest one, really, outside the New Year's Six.
Yeah, those are – I mean, there aren't that many bowls featuring two teams in the top 25. BYU-Colorado is another one, you know, outside the playoff featuring ranked opponents. The Pop-Tarts Bowl has Iowa State and Miami in it.
Where's the Pop-Tarts Bowl?
That is Orlando.
Well, that was quick. I mean, you know, they jumped on that. They didn't waste any time.
No, they were all announced yesterday, Yellowhammer. I mean, as soon as the 12 teams for the playoff were announced, the other bowls were announced.
And pretty much every team that went 6-6 or better that isn't in the college football playoff is participating in a bowl game. So, I mean, I wonder if there will be less interest in these bowls because you have –
there will be.
Yeah, me too. But I think for – you know, for fans and the players and
gamblers.
And gamblers looking for something to bet on a weeknight, you know, the thought of, you know, Cal versus UNLV.
Some of these bowl games are starting even earlier than they used
games
to.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's South Alabama, Western Michigan is playing on Saturday. Yeah, their game's on Saturday.
Huh. Well, who's South Carolina playing again?
South Carolina drew Illinois, right?
That's in the Citrus Bowl, yeah, down in Orlando.
Okay. Well, that's sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. Yep. Great stuff.
334-321-1390. And who is it next? John?
Yeah, John should be up next.
Hey, John.
I heard Brian earlier. I just caught part of the show, so he may have covered it earlier. But I know TJ Lindsey transferred out. I'm just trying to see who we think may transfer out of the 24 class, or if we think we can keep us guys. And your prior caller, the next time Auburn wins in Tuscaloosa or Athens, I damn sure hope they do plant the flag. Whatever people may think, I think football comes off. Anyway, that's all I got.
All right, John.
Out of the 24 class.
Yeah, well, I mean, TJ Lindsey was.
Yeah, I'm
that's where he was mentioning.
Who else?
I
don't know of anybody.
I haven't heard of any. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if somebody who didn't
it
play
happens,
much.
Right. They
at
get
all.
Upset for whatever reason, or maybe school's not going well, but I have not heard anything specifically about
no,
any
nor
other.
Have I. I mean, Auburn's up to about a dozen players, I think, that are in the portal, and I don't think that there are.
No, I don't count the walk on. I don't count.
No, I don't either.
Kite, so I've got it 9.
Okay. Well, but, I was thinking just around double figures.
I mean, I know folks are curious about Perry and Bryce because they didn't play as much as the other two freshman receivers. I think Auburn's got a chance of holding on to all four of those freshman
but
receivers.
Don't be shocked. I mean, you look across the state at Alabama's got some former 5-stars that some of whom played a little bit this year that are going in the portal. So it's not any indication on the state of your program that you've got players going to the portal. That's just the way it is.
Now, it can be. If you got too many of them, you got too many of them going in there.
LSU's got a bunch of guys.
I think a dozen is
a
good number. Don't you, every year? Plus or minus 3, maybe?
And I think between Alabama making a coaching change last year and not making the playoff in year one under this new coach, like I think there was going to be roster turnover anyway. From players who
Kentucky is the school.
Kentucky
has
lost
a lot of players to the portal here.
Yeah, they had a tough year.
Yes, they did.
They had a tough year, and it was sort of an important year for Kentucky because of the expansion of the conference and getting rid of the divisions. And you just feel like maybe there's sort of a bleak outlook, short term for the rest of that. Yeah, like that Stoops era is in dire straits at the moment.
No question. We'll get another call, and Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. This is for BMAC. You got anything special planned for Friday?
Am I not thinking of something? I know I've got – no, I don't think so. Oh, yeah, I do. Yes. Yes, I do.
Isn't that your birthday?
Yes, I'm getting old.
Hey.
That's right. I knew there was something happening Friday.
Good.
I just couldn't remember
Mitch
what it was.
Mitch knows Brian's birthday better than Brian does. You know, when you have that many, when you have as many as we do, Mitch, it's you don't want to remember.
And blank stares all over the studio.
I was going, it's Friday the 13th.
Is there a press conference Friday? What is going on?
I've got a doctor's appointment. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, anyway, I wanted to make a comment about his Monday musings. I haven't read them yet, but I will later. But I actually got to see Kool and the Gang at a theme bar in Raleigh in like 96 or 97. I mean,
nice.
This place even had the dance floor like in Saturday Night Fever.
Oh.
And I got to see, I guess the guy you were talking about.
JT Taylor, yep.
Yeah, and I mean, it was phenomenal. I mean, I've always loved Kool and the Gang. I've got a CD somewhere that's got dust on it that I burned with all their greatest hits and everything.
Oh, yeah.
We saw Kool and the Gang with Sinbad.
Wow.
That was a fun show.
Yeah. And if people don't recognize him, Celebration, of course. Anytime there's some big sports event and some team wins a championship or a big game,
especially,
that's one of the first songs that
especially
played.
In the 80s and 90s,
yep.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean they used to play that at the skate center that was over there on Opelika Road when I was in junior high.
Battle Skate Center, that's right.
Oh yeah.
What's
that, Billy Squire?
That's where my boys went to daycare.
What was that Billy Squire song they'd always play at the skate center?
Stroke. Yeah.
Yep.
Another thing, just I was watching some of the Sun Belt, I guess, championship game, and I think Jack State was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed, like, the opposite side of the field from where the camera was, and it looked like the stands were totally empty.
Yeah, if you looked at some of the championship games, like the ACC, I mean the Big 12 championship game, that stadium was about half empty, and there were a lot of open seats at the SEC Big 10slash ACC games.
Yeah, I think between the short notice of these games and the fact that for some of it's a lot of travel for some of these fan bases. It's something. I mean, I know the ACC used to have notoriously empty stands for. You know those games in Florida when they would play, especially when you didn't have a Florida team participating in the ACC championship. And maybe folks, especially if they know there's another postseason game coming, you know, maybe they're going to save their money and make the trip for the next one. And you know, if you've never, now the fan base, we appreciate the phone call, Mitch. Great stuff. Iowa State was in the Big 12 championship game against Arizona State.
Not for long.
Do you know
but they were?
Do you know
almost a half.
Do you know how many times they've won a conference championship at Iowa State?
I don't recall.
So check this out.
I don't recall any. So
they're a charter Big Six member. They're a charter Big Six.
Ever won one?
Going back to the 20s, right, with the Big Six, which was Kansas, Kansas State, Missouri, Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Iowa State. I think there's something, you know, I think I got them right. And then it became the Big 7 and the Big 8 and the Big 12. Mm-hmm. Like, they've been there the whole time. Zero.
That's what I thought.
Zero conference championships.
Matt Campbell's done a heck of a job.
Like, they won.
They still haven't won a title.
They shared a conference title before World War I with somebody. But in the modern, whatever you want to say is the modern era of college football, no conference championship success to speak of there in Iowa State. Now, that's, and they were close. I guess to start the game there against Arizona State.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kenny Dillingham, right? Picked last.
And they are the Big 12 champs. As somebody pointed out, I guess it was Brandon Marcello pointed out that yes, Pac 12 teams are now the champions of the Big 10 and the Big 12 with Oregon and Arizona State in that no longer league. Two of those teams are now conference champs. We'll get to Dak before we get to our final break. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys, man. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good, good. I just wanted to touch on the question earlier about NIL money and how much they were getting paid. I can only speak for they were going to make starting last summer coming into starters as Auburn players because of the guys that transferred. I asked the coach, why did they transfer?
Mm-hmm.
And he said because they were called in and told that they wouldn't be the starters anymore. And they said, well, what does that mean for our money? And they said, well, you'll be considered a backup. So backups make $2,500, and the starters was making $6,000. So that's what it was.
Yeah, so you're going difference of $30,000 and $72,000 right there. Yeah.
That's right. So that's all I know as far as, with a quarterback, it's probably different. But last summer, that's what the starters and the backups were making.
And that's probably bottom line. That's your base.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I could have gotten by on that when I was in school.
Yeah.
Goodness. Well,
especially when I was in school.
High school, I saw where he was going to come out after Christmas and go to college early. Where's that stand with us? Do we have an opening spot for him, or what does that mean?
Auburn's definitely got spots.
Yeah, I don't know, and I just because I have not checked, I just don't know the interest either way.
All right, guys, thanks, man.
Now Omar is gonna. I mean, he won't be graduating. Like in
right.
December, he's gonna go through this school year and then be a summer enrollee.
And we have the next signing period is
February 4th or something like that.
There you go. Okay.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Tex, you're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
At University Ace Hardware, we're excited to reward our loyal customers.
7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment here on the Monday Drive. And right back to the phone, we go in Tex. Hey, Tex.
Hey, by the way, happy early birthday, Brian.
Thank you.
I won't be around on Friday. So
I'll miss you.
congratulations.
Thank you.
And you know you got a lot of them when you don't remember that your birthday's coming.
No idea, but.
So, anyway, I have a different theory. I think one of the reasons there were empty seats at the SEC championship game is Texas, who's known for traveling extremely well and has a pretty wealthy fan base,
yeah,
didn't go because they knew they were in, no matter
yeah,
what.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So, yeah.
Well, I would – if I knew, then and in a couple of weeks I'm going to be traveling to wherever or get a home game, I'd spend my money there before mm-hmm. I went to it.
Oh, that
really
makes sense.
A game that – I don't know if it had a whole lot of impact as to where the two teams yeah. fell.
You know, and that sort of brings up – and we really didn't get into it earlier – can conference championship games continue to be viable? I mean,
I say no. I wrote about it.
They've been big money makers, but I just don't see where conferences are going to feel like, oh, we've got to have that.
No, well, there's no appetite to go to a number less than 12 for the postseason, mm-hmm. right? Like, it feels like, if anything, they're going to make it 14 or 16 or more, and I don't know what the answer – I mean, my guess is no, especially when you're talking about the Big Ten and the SEC championship games, because you're going to go into a situation where both of those teams are in.
Hey, just think,
like,
you get
more
to go,
often than not.
You get to go back to the days where multiple schools can fly conference championship banners from a year.
Tex, we talked about this last.
That's great.
I like it.
Especially when you got 16 teams.
We talked about it last week, Tex. This would have actually been a great year for a four-team playoff because the conference championship games would have meant so much if we were still in a four-team environment. I'm looking forward to what it looks like with 12, but this past Saturday would have been so high stakes for so many teams if we were still talking about just four.
I agree. But I prefer 16, by the way.
I'm with you.
I don't think anybody deserves a bye.
And I kind of want home. And I want 1 and 2 to get home games. You know, 1 and 2.
But 1 through 8 gets home games.
Yeah, that's what I mean. 1 through 4 don't get to play at home right now under the current system. 1 through 8 would get home games in a 16 system. I think you're right.
Yeah. So I'd much rather that. And by the way, you have to be careful, Bill. Dan was answering the phone in a sexy voice.
Oh.
You know what he was trying to do? Since we're in the same room, he just didn't want that going out over the mic.
Yeah.
I heard Cool in the Gang earlier, and I thought he thought they had a lot of love songs.
Coming up, we got the smooth sounds of our favorite caller, Tex.
I mean, they had Cherish, right? Too Hot, we mentioned. Get Down On It.
Kiss from a Rose by Seal is next up.
Get Down On It's a love song.
Probably not.
It's a song about love.
Yeah, you're right.
Certain
that
kind.
That wouldn't go over very well. I'm going to try it when I get home. I'll call y'all tomorrow.
All right, good luck.
I might be at the attorney's office when I call. The last thing is, watching the basketball game, there was a story about Baker,
Chad Baker Mazar.
Chad Baker Mazar gave up minutes to allow mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. player to play. That says a lot about a team.
Yes, it does.
In today's world, where you're flashing for money on a regular basis, to walk away for minutes, even though it's in a game we were up by 30 most of the time, to give up those minutes and let somebody else play just to get the reps. Says a lot about that basketball team.
You're absolutely right.
Speaks to who he's brought to this program, yep. Tex.
Great stuff, Tex. All right, we are out of time here on the Monday Drive. Brian, tell everybody how they can keep up with everything all you guys have going.
Follow me on socials at BMATAU and, of course, auburnsports.com. Tons of updates on football, recruiting, portaling, you name it, basketball, baseball. Uncle Keith's Red Sauce sponsors my Monday musings, available at Publix, Piggly Wiggly, Renfro, statewide. BMAT 15, 15% off your online order.
Happy birthday. We're out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.